Sports presents
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back, hour two. And, you know, we talked about, I mentioned, you know, what transpired late last night at Flemington. And one thing I sent out this morning was they brought Maccabi Diva to the track. She's 21. It looked unbelievable. It looked like they could have put the saddle on her. She looked so good. Unbelievable. I mean, I can imagine if they had had, you know, people, if they had had, you know, the regular, you know, 100,000 plus, they would have gone crazy. 15th anniversary of, I guess, well, was that her, I guess, was 05? 03, 04, 05? Well, 405-06. Anyway, Maccabi Diva, unbelievable. Go take a look for that. She doesn't look like a 21-year-old mare by any stretch. Fun to talk to Terry Off and a little Empire of Gold. Nick Tamaro is going to join us, and I don't know if Nick's with us yet. No? Case? He is. There he is. Nick, good morning.
Good morning, Steve. How you doing?
I'm okay. I'm all right. It is steady improvement here from the 20s into the 30s. And by the time we get to Thursday, Friday, Saturday, it's going to be absolutely glorious here. And certainly the entry box did its part, it seems, to get us ready for the weekend.
No question about it. It's 184 entries, I believe was the number, which is, you know, obviously terrific, and a lot of big fields in the divisions we've grown accustomed to expect them in. Second consecutive year, we've had kind of a smallish juvenile fillies field, but, you know, I think that's made up for in a lot of the other divisions and certainly won't take away from it because though it's just a field of seven, it's certainly quite competitive. So, yeah. Great offering, good European participation, which in a year like 2020 was not something we necessarily could count on, but it delivered.
Well, let's do what we do and kind of walk through. There's no time constraint. Enjoy these, you know, much more, you know, kind of free form conversations about the fields. And we'll start on Friday, Nick. And, you know, whenever you deal with this, you know, this fairly new category, the juvenile turf sprint, there's a little bit of mystery with these horses. And they're going to put 14 in. And Wesley Ward sent an army here. We've got a little bit of international participation. This has been a surprisingly difficult assignment for the internationals who had, when this race was crafted, the assumption was that, oh, this is pandering to the Euros, and it hasn't exactly panned out that way.
And it's funny, right? The one venue where they would probably have the biggest, not necessarily edge, but best chance would be going six at Doma. And so, you know, that's obviously not happening anytime soon, perhaps a little bit down the hill, although, you know, Euros never won a downhill turf sprint in all the times it was run at Santa Anita. So it is kind of funny how it's worked out. And, you know, Nick Luck talked at length about this in the podcast that he did the other day. I was listening to, as far as Euros go, at 5/8, 5.5 furlongs. And, you know, the point that he made, which we all sort of knew already, but he expanded on a little bit, is that they just get out-footed out of the gate. And, you know, they don't have that first step, and it puts you at a huge disadvantage. It puts you at a really significant disadvantage going five furlongs to a place like Santa Anita, and that was why four-wheel drive was able to just, you know, blitz the field last year. 5.5 at Keeneland is probably a little bit more forgiving for an off-the-pace type, but you know, this looks like a race that's going to be run at a very strong early clip. You have Momos that's going to show speed. Bodenheimer wired the prep race that he won from the far outside. Obviously, you have Golden Pal, who's got a great deal of speed. The thing about Golden Pal, if you're a Timeform US believer, is that the race that he comes out of did not feature a particularly strong pace. So I think the interesting thing as far as betting and how you can translate, because we're primarily going to talk about pace scenarios, but how you can take a potential pace opinion and fold it into a wager is that maybe you want to take a shot against Golden Pal. Maybe you figure, hey, I'm not gonna put my money on him going on a 3 or 4 wide chase on a fast pace and holding off what might be some quality closers. So it looks like it'll be a very honestly run race. I think when push comes to shove, the winner's going to probably come from a little bit off of it. I think it's going to be hard to come from significantly off of it, and I think that none of the Euros made out particularly poorly at the post position draw, though I will say that I'm sure Mighty Gurkha's connections probably didn't want the rail. So we'll see. It should be a fun way to get it started.
And Mighty Gurkha, Archie Watson, with the Doyle.
Holly Doyle.
Holly Doyle. I was going through my Rolodex of Doyles that Holly Doyle gets the opportunity and has ridden Mighty Gurkha five out of the six starts and puts the blinkers on. There were a couple. I know we'll talk about Vekoma and his difficulty or, you know, perceived the potential difficulty with the wide draw. When I looked at, you know, Second in July and Dirty Dangle, they don't necessarily, I guess into the sunrise was really the first, and Bodenheimer, those are the two will definitely light out. I mean, how, you know, we get to watch Arad all the time. I mean, how do you think Arad handles that? I mean, does he absolutely get the lead and you know, before the turn, or do you think he can draft?
You know, one thing that Wesley Ward is very good at is crafting how he wants these horses to be ridden and how he kind of wants things to unfold. So I think he'll let Arad know what he wants. Obviously, last year the plan with four-wheel drive was to take no prisoners, and so he went out for it right away. I think if you see Golden Pal ridden that way and you see some competition to his inside, I think he's going to be in trouble, because I think it's going to be hard for him if they think he's kind of a not necessarily a need the lead type, but a better on the lead type, to find a way to stalk and still be successful.
Doesn't Amanzi Yampillo, doesn't she benefit a little bit to be able to sit behind the speed from midfield?
Yeah, I think there's a thought for that. I think that's kind of where I think the winner's going to come from. Mm-hmm. I think it's going to be a, you know, mid pack type of trip, and
yep.
I think it's going to be hard to navigate around a lot of horses. But I think if you can be in a stalking spot and maybe, you know, catch the wave coming off the far turn, then you'll be really in an ideal position. And I think there's a lot of candidates for that. I think Amanzi Yampillo is among them. I think there's even a couple of long shots that you could give some consideration to, because it. I think once you handle your opinion on Golden Pal, you figure out where you stand, I think there's a lot of options.
Yeah, and the other filly, Dirty Dangle, has demonstrated an ability to, you know, has been very versatile, considering, you know, the debut win on synthetic and then the stalk and go trip in the Woodbine Cares to close out that stake card. And a pretty savvy outfit when it comes to Barber and Eclipse scooping in, and, you know, with this in mind. And you're going to get 20-1. You get Gaffleone. There's some things to like about both of the fillies in here, Amanzi Yampillo and Dirty Dangle. So the juvenile turf sprint starts us off. That gets us to the juvenile turf, Nick. And when you look at this, you know, Mutasa Beck, I know that some people were grousing about the way the morning line was put together. But when you see a 5-1 morning line favorite, it does give you an indication that, you know, this is a bit of a mysterious group. I suppose that Battleground had to be thought of as an alternate favorite. Cadillac was also 6-1. They were co-second choices.
Yeah, I mean, it's when a morning line maker makes a morning line favorite 5-1 in a 14-horse field, he or she are letting you know that they have no clue what's going to happen. So it's, which is, I don't see how anybody could be. There are a lot of morning line musings. I've been engaged in some myself. I've certainly been subjected to them, and it's a thankless job. I think there are some misses on these lines, but look, it's 14 races full of competitive fields, so it's definitely going to happen. I don't think this was a miss. I will say, though, that Mutasabek is a hard horse to really wrap your hands around as the favorite. He ran, I think, what could be considered an impressive race in the Bourbon. He got an enormous pace to run at, and I think he caught a field that was really ripe for the picking. I don't think that you'll find any of those horses ever being competitive in graded stake races again. Much of the balance of the field behind him, perhaps with the exception of Abarta. But, you know, the other thing that you have to be mindful of as a morning line maker is what you're doing with these Europeans. And Battleground is the one who'll certainly be the most fancied, given the flashy pedigree, being by Warfront out of Sound, who, of course, won the Arc in 2016, won the Breeders' Cup Turf in 2015, and Battleground has won a couple of races in a row. Comes in here in a very atypical fashion for Aidan O'Brien, having been off for quite some time, and that's, you know, usually not the case. Usually we see O'Brien maybe trying to squeeze another start into a horse that ends up coming to the Breeders' Cup. But obviously something did not go particularly perfectly for Battleground along the way. Worth noting, and we'll do this more, I think, when we're handicapping. This is more about pace scenarios. But the horses that he beat in the Verve Clicquot Vintage Stakes have really gone backwards since then. So the other thing worth discussing is Aidan O'Brien's record in America the last few years is horrible. So there needs to be real concern given the other things. Yet another thing to pile on with, it's been a pretty tumultuous 6 weeks for his barn. Yeah. Now, going back to two horses being misidentified in September, he had a contaminated feed issue. You know, obviously last night, you don't want to hold this against him, but if, you know, Anthony Van Dyke went wrong in the Melbourne Cup, which is very unfortunate, very nice horse that we saw run in America a couple times. So it's been a really tough fall for Aidan O'Brien. And I don't know necessarily if he has brought over the soldiers, so to speak, to kind of turn things around. So I'm going to be more anti-Battleground. I like New Mandate. I like Cadillac as far as the Euros go. I think Public Sector is a very dangerous domestic horse. I thought Fire at Will really had the race to himself last time, and I think that worked against Public Sector. Seal Away on the inside is going to get a lot of support. He obviously comes off a huge win over Bottomless Ground, and that, I think, has been treated by most of the European analysts as a race where he simply survived on a course where it was very difficult for anybody to do so. I don't think there's a particularly huge amount of pace in here. I think Fire at Will is going to go to the lead. I think Out of Door is going to go to the lead. I don't think it's going to be a particularly spirited gallop, and I think you're going to see a very honestly run race, but I think it could be more on the staying together side, if you will, because I don't think there's much collapse potential.
I agree, and you know, the horse that you didn't mention, and I think about Marcassi, and I think it was here. Catch a Glimpse, was that here?
Yeah, 2015, Keeneland.
Gretzky the Great has won on the lead, or has won, you know, sitting, you know, literally, you know, just keeping company with speed, and did that going both 6.5 and then on the stretch out in the Summer Stakes. I don't see why Gretzky the Great is not a serious danger. And I can tell you that right early on, there was real expectation that there was a nice, nice glow around this horse right when he debuted.
Yeah, I think he obviously fits the profile. I think he drew favorably given the pace scenario. I probably would rather be a few stalls to the inside, but he seems to fit on basically every type of analytical measure. And, you know, I think maybe the biggest charge against him is the potential for the competition he faced being kind of weak. But, you know, we don't know exactly what's in here, right? It's a big guessing game. So that's why I wanted what looked like they were potentially forwardly placed Euros in New Mandate and Cadillac. They each seem to show a decent amount of positional speed. Obviously, they'll be farther off the pace than they were in their most recent starts overseas, but that looked to me like kind of the way you wanted to go.
Well, and of course, it There may be a familiar sinking feeling for those that that gloss over fire at will to look up and see those powder blue silks with those yellow diamonds and wiring a field, and you'll say you'll want to jump off of the roof of your house with Mike Maker and the Wyckoffs. It's pretty funny. The declaration of war out of the Kittens Joy Mare, fire at will, and a bit of a mystery too. I mean, that performance in the Pilgrim. That was a serious effort. I don't know why that doesn't get some people's attention too. So a juvenile turf. This has been a race that the Euros have succeeded in, as opposed to the Philly side, where the North American interests have fared better. Let's talk about the pace in the smallish juvenile Philly set, Nick, and in here. You know, I guess it might have been nice to have had a few more bodies, but what's not troubling, but what's evident is there really isn't a must-have lead type in here. Simply Ravishing's hand, though, may have been forced quite a bit by the inside draw.
Yeah, and I think that that the one that really made out like a bandit at the draw was Tim Hamm with Day at the Office,
mm-hmm.
Day Out of the Office. Who probably wants to stalk whichever one of those two to her inside shows a great deal of speed. I don't, you know, the tricky thing there is not only do you have the Simply Ravishing conversation, and as far as pace figures go, Simply Ravishing is not as fast as Vaquist and Day Out of the Office. Now, understanding that Vaquist and Day Out of the Office earned those fast pace figures around one turn, so there's a little bit of a difference at play. But, I mean, I'm a believer in them. I'm a believer in the Timeform U.S. pace figures. And so I think that Vaquist and Day Out of the Office are faster, but it will depend on what Luis Saez does in those first few strides out of the gate. And I think that'll dictate basically what happens going to the first turn. I think coming out of the gate in this race, you're going to want to look at the 1 and 2, because if Rosario comes out with his mind on business on Vaquist, then she's going to get the lead. And she might just take them all on a chase, and he's going to try and do something similar to what he did on Jaywalk a couple of years ago. And, I mean, let me assure anybody out there, he is not only the most skilled off-the-pace rider in the game, but Joel Rosario is a very, very good rider on the lead.
Mm-hmm.
And you want to be very careful betting a lot of horses that are going to have to run down a horse that he's got on the front end. I think the thing that some of us get frustrated about is he doesn't really necessarily put his horses on the lead all that often. This is a scenario where I think he'll find her find a forwardly placed spot for Vaquist, and then I think you'll have Princess Noor chasing those. I'm not going to get into an extended conversation about Princess Noor and her slow buyer speed figures or anything like that, at least not now. But I think she'll be exactly where she wants to be, probably a couple of lengths off of it and ready to pounce when one of the top few falter, getting around the far turn. And, you know, with the short stretch, I think what's usually clear about a mile and a 16th to Keeneland is that when you hit that, what's the normal quarter pole, but it's the 3/16th pole with the short stretch, you want to be in position. And if you're not at that point, then I think you're in a pretty tough spot.
I don't know if you heard, had a chance yesterday with Scott Hazelton and Rich Migliori, but Scott brought up a germane workmate conversation. And in fact, he pulled up the video and we were watching it as Rich Migliori was bouncing some of the things off of Scott's commentary. He mentioned Princess Noor soundly handling Spielberg in their most recent work, and then Scott showed it to me because I had not seen it. And then Spielberg went out on Sunday, 85 buyer, and you know, looked good doing it. And so I know that we'll talk about it later, probably Thursday, when we handicap in earnest and make final selections, but this is one of the most interesting questions, the figs don't lie, axiom versus a horse that that may be capable of elevating, and there's going to be some people beating their chest either way.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I mean, it's she is I don't even know what exactly the right word is. She's, for a horse that's run three times, she's a very polarizing type.
It's amazing.
And we'll learn a lot about it. And you know what's going to be funny, Steve, is if she wins in a driving finish by a neck and gets an 86 buyer speed figure and beats, a clearly regressing Day Out of the Office, well, who would have been right? right? Was Andy wrong or was the public wrong? Not really, right? I mean, and that's certainly possible. And I'm not going to take a big stand against her wagering-wise, which, like you said, we'll talk more about on Thursday. But, yeah, she's, from that perspective, she is one of the most, well, actually, from that perspective, she's the most interesting horse running over the course of the 2 days.
No doubt. Then we can, if that happens the way you described, you're all winners.
Exactly right.
You got it right. You got it right. You got it right.
It'll be, see, he's biased. He didn't give her a higher figure.
That's right. There you go. Let's move to the juvenile filly turf. And this group, obviously with the, the international success of Stone Street and Wesley Ward's Campanelle, it feels like everything, kind of revolves around her. And, it's just so unusual to have a North American connected horse like this who's mid-season included, wins in about as heralded a pair of international events as you're going to find for two-year-olds. And I do wonder, I mean, if there's a school of thought that says she's going to be better than anybody in here, and you may not need to get all that clever and creative. But let's first of all talk about, how this thing lines up, because there are some, there are some horses that have got speed in here, and we'll see how Dettori handles it.
Yeah, that's going to be one of the most interesting things. And the other thing that I can tell you is, if I hear one more person tell me that Aunt Pearl set a stakes record last time, I'm going to pull the small amount of hair that I still have out, because they position the gate at a run-up spot that they've never done before. So, I mean, this was absolutely the first race run at a mile and a 16th at that exact distance. So it is completely and totally irrelevant. But I know that that's fodder for conversation, especially on television. I think Aunt Pearl is actually a tremendous bet against her. And I think there's a lot of speed in here. I think that's really going to work against her. She looks like a big-time talent, but I think this is a lot for her to handle in a short period of time. And not only do you have to figure out where Campanelli is going to be early, but Royal Approval, who's the other Wesley Warden here, also has a great deal of speed. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, the likelihood that Aunt Pearl is able to clear this bunch and do what she did last time, to me, is very, very low. I think this is ripe for a mid-pack type, even a closing type. And I mean, we'll talk more in the handicapping portion of our conversations, but I'm going to call my shot that Christoph Clement gets on the board, the Breeders' Cup win-wise, because I think the Plum Ali is going to get really an ideal trip. And I think that the Euros in here are just, they seem like a little bit lesser. And as you said, they've generally not been as competitive in this race. Only two European-based winners, Flotilla and Cristellium, in the Juvenile Fillies turf in the history of it. And this doesn't look like a particularly strong group. The American contingent really is supposed to, and I still consider Campanelli to be an American horse. As far as she goes, the whole question with a lot of the 2 and 3 year old form from Europe this year is, how good was it, right? Because of COVID, and you had people that kind of abandoned training for a while, and you had horses being brought along slower than they probably normally would have, and it changed things quite a bit. So, did she beat a traditional pre-morning field last time? I mean, you could burden yourself with that question and probably overthink it quite a bit. I think she's a horse with a tremendous amount of talent, regardless of who she's beaten. I just don't think this race is going to unfold properly for her or on Pearl, and I think that opens the door for somebody who's going to be coming from a little bit off of it, and I think there are some real options.
Still got to get a little bit more information and watch a couple of races. This Uden Adata for Harrington down inside, Miss Amulet, Ken Condon. We'll also have international conversation with Steve Anderson and Nick Luck and more. Marcus Hirsch, I'm sure, will have some thoughts, and probably also talk to Vance Hansen and Kelly Riley as well from Briss, who have the international runners in their crosshairs, O'Brien with Mother Earth. I saw this Nizuna this morning, Nick, who was kind of just caught my eye, really the kind of horse that that I kind of like, just showing how much fun, in essence, she was having out there. And we certainly respect Roger Varian.
Very much. He had trained the second-place finisher in this race last year behind behind Sharing. And I think between, you know, the issue I think that the fillies run into, and believe me, there are people far more skilled with this than myself, but I think the issues the fillies run into coming over for this race is that a lot of the top-class two-year-old racing amongst fillies in Europe is done at 6 and 7 furlongs up until, you know, early October. And so horses like Udnadatta and Miss Amulet, who looks to me to be the better of the two, and actually gets a local jockey in Julian LaPerru, she's never going beyond 6 furlongs. So, you know, that's the issue, is you got to tack on, in most of these cases, a second turn, sometimes two turns, and a couple of extra furlongs. So I think that's generally been one of the issues. The French-trained horses have done better over time than some of the British-based, but I think it just so happens that, you know, Chad Brown's won like 4 of these, and Catch a Glimpse won one of them, and obviously Sharing last year is a really talented horse, so, you know, we should give ourselves some credit. I know it's cachet for everybody to just dump on our turf horses, but we've actually had some pretty damn good 2-year-old fillies on the turf over the years, so it's no surprise that it's gone that direction.
Friday closes out with the juvenile, and the mile and a 16th two-turn aspect is going to figure, you know, prominently with a number of these, and not the least of which is Jackie's Warrior. Also, Dale Romans, who, you know, has had tremendous success in this race. Sitting on Go is making the transition as well to two turns. We do have, you know, a horse like Next, even, who more or less, and the horses like that, and late types, classier, that, you know, they just broke the maiden stretching out. And to me, this is a funny bunch, the way this race came together. You got the two Brad Cox, you got the Brad Cox winner, Essential Quality, coming out of the Breeders' Futurity, and Keep Me in Mind, the Diodoro, that chased home and actually slaps blinkers on. Pace here, I mean, is everybody simply going to be chasing Jackie's Warrior from the get-go?
Yeah, I mean, it feels like if they're willing to do that, then they're going to get they're going to get what they deserve, which is him wiring the field, because he's a horse that, you know, ask the Connections of Reinvestment Risk what it's like watching Jackie's Warrior establish a comfortable lead. Right, you end up getting a front row seat to something that you kind of knew was happening all along. And there's just way too much speed on paper for this race to just go to Jackie's Warrior in wire-to-wire fashion. It would require Dreamer's Disease and a lot of other horses to show no speed whatsoever, which just seems – I mean, you've got Likeable from a couple
Likeable,
of
definitely.
Inside that yep. has some speed. You know, what gets done with Essential Quality will be kind of an interesting question. I don't think he'll be ridden for speed. I think they'll probably try and let them go a little bit and sit a few lengths off of it. But now, Classier is one for one, having won at a sprint distance. And he, you know, Bob Baffert puts a jockey on that's really at his best on the lead or forwardly placed. So, I mean, in all likelihood, you'd figure Classier is going to show a good amount of speed. Next, who you mentioned, has speed. Now, the only horse towards the outside that's shown speed that you think probably won't is Calibrate, only because he's a stablemate of the likely heavy favorite. So they have to go in here. It looks like a race that has to be run at a very strong early pace. And one thing I'll say about my own 16th races at Keeneland is that I think people focus too much on the short stretch and not enough on the long run to the first turn. And what I mean about that is that, you know, obviously the lengthier the straightaway, the higher the likelihood of a quick pace. And you very often have a strong early clip in these mile and 16th races, and it can really take a toll. Jackie's Warrior is a horse that's got a tremendous amount of talent, and quite honestly, regardless of who wins this race, maybe with the exception of Essential Quality, I hope he wins the Eclipse. But he can get this could be a problem for him. The additional 16th, the second turn, the fact that this race is packed with speed could be a big issue. I think that you have to really embrace a horse like Sitting on Go, a son of Brody's Cause, who won the Breeders' Futurity in probably very similar fashion to how Sitting on Go would potentially win this race. And, you know, Dale Romans always has his 2-year-olds ready for big objectives, and I think this horse will be no exception. The Iroquois was a surprising result, but I think Dale did the right thing, which is give him a little bit of time to get in here and probably hoped upon hope that he'd watch a bunch of preps and there'd be a lot of pace in all of them and love seeing Jackie's Warrior run the way he did. So you feel like this is going to be a quick pace and that's going to work to the advantage of a closer like sitting on go. I think you also have closers like Rombauer, who is interesting, didn't particularly draw that great, but you know, this is a horse that was 3/4 of a length off of the win in the American Pharoah. And I thought ran quite well that day, making really the only off the pace move, looks like a forward moving type. And it's worth mentioning, I mean, the majority of the success Michael McCarthy had this year came outside of California. So he knows what to ship. He knows how to get horses ready. And he saddled a number of winners in Kentucky over the years when he worked for Todd Pletcher. So I think Rombauer is an interesting price as well.
You know, the horse that could benefit from any spirited pace, to me, feels like Reinvestment Risk is going to get a delightful ground-saving trip down inside. Arad, you know, the every reason to believe that, you know, into the turn, he's got the rail and can basically move at will with a, you know, an inside-outside trip, which is usually something that is very successful here.
Yes, and this is a horse who's comfortable inside. He won his debut sitting on the rail. The one thing that I'm concerned with, and I'm going to use Reinvestment Risk, the one thing I'm concerned with is, I think everybody's worried about Jackie's Warrior's distance limitations. I'm a little worried about Reinvestment Risk. And that's only, and maybe the argument is that he was forced to run a little too hard early in chasing Jackie's Warrior, but he did, I kind of wanted him to put up a little bit more fight last time. And I wondered if the distance might be getting to him a little bit. That being said, I mean, you want, it, when a race is going to unfold like this and you've got a horse that should be taken back to make one run, I mean, you want Irad or Rosario. So you've got a top-notch pilot on to figure things out. And like you said, he should be able to save a lot of ground. And, you know, one thing that you're not going to be surprised if he finds his way 8 or 9 lengths off the pace in here, and it's probably not going to be a problem if that's where he ends up, because it means they're going to really be flying in front of him.
Well, there's the Friday lineup, and some potentially compromised horses at low prices on pace scenarios. Golden Pal in the juvenile turf sprint, and Jackie's Warrior, probably the shortest price of the entire weekend in the juvenile. Let's turn to Saturday, Nick, and pace. there'll be some fast paces on the weekend. Don't know if there's going to be a faster pace early than what we're going to see from Serengeti Empress and potentially Gamine. Baffert was not happy that she drew down inside like that in the 2-0.
Oh, God, I absolutely loved it. I was just thrilled. Because I want this thing to be as fast as possible, and Serengeti being outside of everybody is exactly what you want, because, you know, what we all know is that when they hit the half mile pole, Serengeti Empress is going to be likely on the rail and on the lead, and you know, her, it's going to be a hell of a march to that point, because she will have cleared off Gamine and In the Midst of Biz and Venetian Harbor, and, you know, look, quite honestly, she's way, way, way faster than those horses early. I mean, I can't, and I know that this is something that people have kind of argued or questioned because they're seduced by Gamine's easy wins in the test and the Acorn. Those paces were very, very slow. And part of why her winning margin was exaggerated so much was because she set slow paces and she was able to sprint away from those horses late. Look, Gamine is a filly with a ton of talent, no doubt about it. But they made out very poorly at the post position draw. And this is a much different... Facing Venetian Harbor when Venetian Harbor is being raided into submission is very different than facing Serengeti Empress. And I think that they're going to get, this is a 7-5 shot I'm looking to bet against, obviously, with both fists. So I guess the question becomes, from a wagering perspective, you know there's going to be a fast pace. Do you embrace Bell's the One and Sally's Curlin as off the pace types? Obviously, Bell's the One has a little bit more positional speed, doesn't need to come from quite so far back, whereas Sally's Curlin is coming from way out the back door. Or are you looking for a horse like Speech on the cutback, who might be, you know, just mid-pack and ready to pounce when things shake out early? The good thing for Speech is that most of the field outside of her is made up of horses with extreme running styles. And what I mean by that is you've got horses that want to go to the lead. There's about 4 of them. And then 2 of the remaining 5 want to be way out of the back. So she should actually get into a great spot. And I know that the rail probably wasn't considered a great draw for her, but I think it'll work out fine. And I think she'll be in a good position. You also have a horse like Sconson, who might not quite be good enough, but really could be an underneath player, because one of the things she's shown is that when she gets some pace to run at, she can be very dangerous.
The gut reaction here, when this draw came, you know, was that Gamine was going to have in the midst of Biz keeping her company to her outside, and certainly Contreras, and I'm delighted for Manny Esquivel to get a Breeders' Cup mount. They're going to want to go coming out of that TCA win, and she's going to be completely ignored. She's sort of, in a lot of ways, you know, we just had that conversation with Terry Yoff about the Empire of Gold, his first Breeders' Cup, and in the midst of Biz is kind of a female version of him. And then Venetian Harbor, what are they going to do pace-wise? How does Franco handle having Serengeti, to the outside? You assume she's going to break, you got to go forward, right? I mean, how aggressive is she going to be? And frankly, she's going to meet up, if she breaks at all, she's going to meet up within the midst of Biz, and she could very quickly find herself in a bit of a four-horse scramble, no?
Yeah, it's possible. I mean, it's basically going to be a question of how hard and how long it takes for Serengeti Empress to clear off of those three. And I think that if you're Manny Franco, you want to break and you want to get into position. You want to let Serengeti Empress get in front of you, and then you basically want to become the outside speed and stalk and hope that that's good enough. And, you know, we've seen this work quite a few times. It basically has been the winning tactic in a number of Breeders' Cup sprints, where you have a horse that, while most quality sprinters are better on the front end, if they can see open space on the outside, they're just as comfortable. I mean, you think of Work All Week and Run Happy, and to an extent, Matoli, Trineberg, you know, all of those horses got almost exactly those kind of trips. And so I think that's what you're banking on for Venetian Harbor. The question with Venetian Harbor becomes, if you think she can get herself into that position, is she then going to be good enough to reel in the horses in front of her and hold off some of those back markers? And that's the bigger issue, I think. So these races are hard. They're hard for me. They're hard, I think, for everybody handicapping, because you have so many horses with really tried and true running styles that are going to have to adjust because they simply cannot employ those tactics and be successful. The exception to that in this race is Serengeti Empress. You know what she's doing. You know she's the like Mariano Rivera. They're going to throw the same pitch over and over. Right? Just a matter of whether you can hit it. So I mean, you know what you're getting, and I love that about Tom Ames and about the filly, in that they eventually perfected exactly what she wanted to do. And I mean, her last two races have been absolutely sensational. And for all of us that clamor for horses to be ridden and campaigns like this, she's the poster child of it. And so, believe me, if I lose, I hope the Serengeti Empress wins.
It feels like that's something of a consensus groundswell type. Let's talk about the turf sprint, which we think back to, and I kept reminding people ever since Andy Serling brought it up maybe 3-4 weeks ago about looking at the charts from 5 years ago, and being aware about how these races were run, so that you could at least at this time of year and under similar conditions, et cetera. And when it comes to the turf sprint, everybody's inclination, Nick, is to assume, oh, it's going to be a frenetic pace. Then you look at this lineup and not so much.
Yeah, it's really not. It's actually not. It doesn't look like it's going to be a particularly fast pace at all.
No.
And I think what's funny, so if you go back 5 years and you look on the calendar, if the Breeders' Cup had been held the same weekend in 2020, would have been held last weekend. And think about the turf course that it would have been run on.
Hmm.
Right now, think about the turf course it's going to be run on this year, where temperatures are supposed to get into the high 60s and low 70s, even into Breeders' Cup weekend. And I think you're going to have, I think the footing is still going to be a little bit loose, but I think it's going to be a much firmer course than it was in 2015 when, quite honestly, I mean, it was a very soft course, probably along the lines of what was run on at Churchill in 2018. And one of the things you saw in the turf sprint in a lot of the turf races that year was that it was very difficult to make prolonged off-the-pace moves. And it's very hard to quicken when you're running over that kind of bog. So I remember this race, this Breeders' Cup turf sprint, in excruciating detail, where it's one of those races where I replay in my mind and hope that the second-place finisher doesn't finish there, who was Lady Shipman, whereas Mongolian Saturday sat just off the pace and ended up holding on, and I needed Mongolian Saturday over Green Mask. So, yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be a similar type of dynamic, in that it doesn't look like there's going to be a particularly fast pace. The only thing going for people looking for a fast pace in this race that happened is that big run you are drew the rail. And that was that basically forces him to be ridden very hard from the gate. And it also brings into the realm of possibility, he has no margin for error. So, I mean, if he does not break well, then this could end up being a race where some sort of goofball outsider could end up going and getting the lead. And are you going to be altogether shocked if they just forget to quit? So it's a, you know who I think made out really well was Leinster. Mm-hmm. I think he made out very well.
Yep.
I think Wet Your Whistle ended up making out very well. I thought that Wet Your Whistle employing different tactics last time showed his versatility. He's a really quality horse. And so I think that, that he's going to be very dangerous. You know, those are the kind of horses I think that you could see a little bit more forwardly placed if things are not unfolding the way we expect. And the other horse I think is Imprimis, who is a just tremendously talented horse and has a lot of tactical speed. I hope that Irad is aggressive out of the gate in the sense that you want him to get good position if the two runners to his inside show the speed that we're expecting. And if they don't, then he needs to be forwardly placed anyway, because, I mean, you know what's going to be running at you late is of pretty high quality. Including Got Stormy and Alexandra, both of the fillies in here who are very talented. And you've got a horse like Extravagant Kid who just seems to run hard every single time. So you're going to have some movers late that are trying to get in the mix. But, yeah, it does not look like a particularly fast-paced turf sprint at all.
You know, Got Stormy, you didn't include in the conversation, but certainly that Buffalo Trace heroics after having to be extricated. I mean, there's no reason why she can't attend whatever pace and get that, you know, that outside open air box where the air is fresh and clean, the Marty McGee trip.
No, she definitely can. I mentioned that she might find her way into a really good spot. I actually think it's interesting. She's going to be about a fourth of the price of Intimistic, who she beat by a nose. And I'm not necessarily saying that they should be the same price, but I don't know if there should be a huge disparity. And Intimistic might actually get a little bit better run in here, given the expected pace scenario. So I think it's a race where the favorite will end up being probably around 7-2 or 4-1, and I don't see how anybody could go off lower than that or how they could deserve to.
Alexandra, a mare that we're going to give a long look to as well when we make some final analysis Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Turn to the Dirt Mile, and we ended up with a big, bulky field here. Complexity is going to be one of the shorter favorite prices, you would think, although there are some places where money could gravitate. I mean, certainly Art Collector is going to have fans. K-Nix Go has got that glaring number power performance at a mile and a 16th in here, 7-2. And I suppose that Brad Cox isn't going to go back now. you know, the idea is going to be to light right out. From the time the bell rings, Complexity and Pirate's Punch will be a little forward. Mr. Freeze kind of got back on the beam with that mile and an eighth win. I don't know if does he still have that sharpness that is going to be required. And Owendale, a late addition, keeping the other Japanese horse from participating, Ping Jang. This is really a fun group, and one of the races that you know, maybe a formula in here somewhere, Nick, for something fun. I think some people can take some shots in here.
Yeah, I think so. I think there are real options. I mean, considering this race when it was run at Keeneland in 2015 was basically Liam's Maps to lose. It's a far different race. You know, you're talking about Complexity likely favored at 5-2 or so. In terms of post positions, he was a horse who really needed to get the kind of draw that he did. He needs to be outside. He does not like to be inside. There is a huge difference in his performances when he's outside versus inside. So things worked out very well. He also has two horses immediately to his outside that have no speed. So he should be forwardly placed, and that'll work really well, I think, and makes him very dangerous. You know, the conversation about K-Nix Go is really what it boils down to is, are you a believer in the final time figure, or are you a believer in kind of the pace figure last time? Because one of the reasons why he sped off and ran so quickly was that he set a very soft pace, and he's not getting that this time. He's going to have Complexity on his hip. He could potentially have Pirate's Punch on his hip as well. We'll see how aggressively War of Will is ridden in the opening couple of furlongs. Remember, this is a race that's going to be at a significantly shorter run for the first turn, with it starting just beyond the finish line, just before the finish line, there's going to be a lot of run-up. But it's still a race where I think position is going to matter. And I think it's open to whatever you want pace-wise. I think if you believe that it's going to be fast and you want to bet an off-the-pace horse like Owendale, who has a big local win and comes in off a probably a better-than-it-looks second in the Pimlico Special when really taken out of his preferred running style, or do you think that it's the kind of scenario where, you know, Knicks Go and Complexity end up battling it out and they duke it out all the way? I think that there's a really potential for either. And so it's really, really interesting in that respect.
Also going to be interested in Sharp Samurai's, how he approaches this race. I'm intrigued by him. I've liked him all along, and Mark Glatt doesn't misfire too often. Filly and Mare Turf comes back, and we've got the presence, obviously, of Sister Charlie and her sister. We also have got the more Chad Brown contenders, including the favorite Rushing Fall. And what can you say about her when it comes to this racetrack, this turf surface, the Beard Course? She's nearly perfect, 5 for 6. Then there's some international participation. There is the under the radar Harvey's Little Goyle coming off the Queen Elizabeth. And I don't think she's going to be 20-1 when the bell rings.
Probably not. I think she might not quite be good enough, but I obviously have a tremendous amount of affection for her and certainly won't be beaten by her. I think pace-wise, the connections of Mean Mary and Rushing Fall would love for this to turn into another version of the Diana. Obviously, Mean Mary's connections would hope for a slightly different result, but it looks as if they're going to both get the same kind of trip.
Mm-hmm.
And it figures for Mean Mary to go to the lead and Rushing Fall to just be right off of her. I would imagine Harvey's Little Goyle will be probably just off of that. And then as far as the European contingent goes, and I've watched a lot of replays, the best I can determine is Cayenne Pepper has the most early foot. And one of the interesting things about the race Cayenne Pepper comes off of, which I believe was called the Blandford, is that she was sitting outside the early leader, and Magic Wand was sitting in third. And as they go through the stretch, Cayenne Pepper opens up a huge winning margin. She won by 4 lengths, which in European racing just doesn't happen very much. And Magic Wand completely fell apart late. I don't know if maybe she was a casualty of what could have been a pretty spirited pace. We obviously don't get sectionals on how they ran over there, but I don't think Cayenne Pepper is all that slow. And I think having the far outside post will probably force Shane Foley to ride her a little bit more early. And I think that helps. I always give an extra look to the Europeans that can show a little bit of tactical speed. But yeah, this looks like a race that'll have a decent pace for a mile and 3/16. One of the things that Rushing Fall's worst effort in her career came in a super fast-paced mile at Keeneland last year, and this is not going to be one of those. So I think you're going to get Rushing Fall's best shot. Obviously, Sister Charlie is going to need things to be a little bit quicker on the front end. She has not had the luxury of her rabbit this year, and I don't know if that's really why her performances have slid so much. I think Father Time might be catching up, but I will say that I thought pace-wise things really worked against her last time at Saratoga. I think it, even though it doesn't look like it's going to be a particularly fast pace in here, I don't think it's going to be nearly as slow in terms of really negating the ability of the closers to kick on a little bit. So it looks like a fun – this is a really fun race top to bottom. I'm one of the – I think – Of the turf races, I'm looking forward to this one most because you've got a lot of good horses getting together in what should be an honestly run race pace-wise, and you've got interesting older horses that are trying to get back to form and a couple of youngsters taking on elders, and it looks like it's going to be a really good one.
The sprint, we've got maybe the worst of the draw of short prices in Vekoma having to negotiate from the 14, and we assume that he's going to be ridden aggressively in here. Shockingly, when you again we've talked about other than the filly and mare sprint, there's obviously there's some people that some horses that are interested in the front end here. I mean, I'm not saying there's nobody with speed. I mean, Yaupin obviously with Stablemate Nashville opting, you know, to be a nickel in the Perryville clears the deck for Yaupin. But yeah, there's not insane pressure in this either.
No, there's really not. And actually, to be, I think Yaupin's going to go wire to wire. I think the issue for him will be Empire of Gold. If he clears Empire of Gold, then I think the race is over. If Declan Carroll is instructed to ride Empire of Gold a little bit more early, then maybe Yaupin just sits off of him and takes over when he feels like it. But yeah, there's no, I mean, I don't want to say there's no pace in here, but for a Breeders' Cup sprint, there's no pace in here. It's a very, very soft race from a pace perspective. I mean, you're talking about probably the third fastest horse early in this race, even the second fastest horse being Frank's Rocket. So, I mean, it's pretty weak from that perspective. Obviously, there's not a whole lot of talent in it top to bottom anyway, but you kind of would wish that in a Breeders' Cup sprint there would be a little bit more positional speed, and there's not. And so I think that'll work to the advantage of Yaupin. One of the things we talked about last week, and I'll say again today, and I'll probably say Thursday or Friday, whenever else you have me, is that with these kind of races at Keeneland, be very careful with off-the-pace horses. This does not look like it's going to be a fast pace. There are a lot of closers in here that might try and suck you in. Don't buy it. I wouldn't have bet Vekoma from the 7, so I have no interest in him from the 14. He won a horrible Met Mile where he rode, I think, what was a good inside as that day went on. You just saw nothing but negative performances from everybody in that field coming out of it. And now he has the 14 off a layoff. The only thing going for him, two things are that he's run well locally at Keeneland, and George Weaver's barn heated up significantly during Belmont, whereas he had a very un-George Weaver-like slow Saratoga. But this is a really, really tough ask, in my opinion. And I don't even know if he's necessarily fast enough to really give Yaupin a lot of trouble early. He's got decent speed, but it's going to be hard off a layoff for Vekoma to chase a moderate pace by these horses' standards and still hold up coming in fresh.
Now, and there's a couple of horses that have similar running styles. CZ Rocket, Firenze Fire. They both feel like they're the sitting fourth and fifth, and are going to try to move at the right time to engage.
Yeah, that feels like that. One of the reasons why CZ Rocket's gotten a lot better is because he's got a lot more speed now. This is a horse who always had a tremendous amount of talent and obviously, kind of lost his way in Al Stahl's barn. One of the things about him is that he seems to keep winning. He runs the same race every time. And though I might want to dump on this field for another hour or so, I don't think a 97 buyer's move. So I think he's going to have to run a little bit better. And he's just, I think being drawn inside, I'd want a little bit better price than you're going to get on him, so I'm not going to be surprised if he wins. I would just prefer somebody that offers a little bit more value.
Let's get through the late pick four on the pace scenario and the mile. The mile is kind of interesting. This race kept changing as rumors and as various horses were either considered and then taken out of consideration. You got a horse like Circus Maximus coming over for O'Brien. Kamiko made an early commitment to this race. Siskin is kind of this year's model of a three-year-old miler from Europe that we see. Safe Voyage, is a consideration at a nice price. One Master, more of a sprinter, going to kind of stretch out. And then there's the American cast like Uni trying to reprise. And then a lot of familiar faces, Raging Bull and Factor This and so forth. Ivar, though, emergent with that Shadwell win for Paulo Lobo. Even a Digital Age, March to the Arch has had nice form into the late summer and fall. It's kind of a fun group. Casa Creed got up to third in the four-star Dave after kind of idling at a strange juncture off the turn and then re-engaged. He's reunited with Alvarado. I don't have a handle yet on this.
Yeah, it's a good bad field, right? I mean, it's a really interesting bunch of probably, average to slightly above average milers. And I think the Euro contingent is solid. I think Kamiko's solid. I think One Master, you can make a case for. She might be getting a little long in the tooth. And and her best distance is probably is definitely a furlong shorter, given that she's a three-time winner of the Prix de la Forêt. But I would encourage people that have any interest in One Master or are being dismissive of her to rewatch the 2018 Breeders' Cup Mile and keep watch that in the context of all of the turf races from 2018 and understand that she spent an appreciable portion of that race on the inside. And you did not want to be down there. I mean, look at where Enable and Magical were by the time the turf rolled around. So look at where Sister Charlie was, for that matter, when she won the Filly and Mare turf a little bit earlier on that card. The interesting thing about this pace-wise is that basically all nine horses drawn 1 through 9 have one thing in common. They have no speed. All of the horses that want to be forwardly placed are drawn towards the outside, with the exception, potentially, of what I just said of Casa Creed. Halliday, Factor This, and Ivar generally have the most speed. Now, Ivar, with the equipment change last time, was a much more relaxed horse, and that obviously helped quite a bit, and is really the reason why he's the morning line favorite in this race. What this is going to boil down to pace-wise is how hard Florent Giroux pushes Factor This to get clear of Halliday, or if Saez goes on a mission where he feels as if he has to get the lead on Halliday, and that's going to determine the outcome. Those two have the most speed by far. They've both been successful by being aggressively ridden, being forwardly placed. And, you know, there's no reason to change what's worked. And so I think Factor This is a little bit faster. But these are two guys that, you know, it's not as if one of them was being ridden by Irad Ortiz or something, and you'd say, Irad will just, you know, he'll let Florent go. You know, but Saez is not going to do that. And I think that Saez and Todd Pletcher are smart enough to know what works for this horse and that he needs to be on the lead. So that'll be what determines it. I think... One of the things I believe about the Euros is that I think Siskin has the biggest turn of foot. I think he might be the one that's able to make up the most ground in the stretch. I also think that Kamiko is very, very dangerous. So it's a good race. It's very interesting from pretty much every perspective. I think that Ivar, based on the race he ran last time, is a deserving favorite, and he's so versatile in that he can be, you know, close to the pace if they're not really moving much early, or take 4 or 5 lengths off of it to make that one run. So it's a fun mile, and I think at the very least, pace-wise, we're going to get an honestly run race.
Turn to the distaff, and not a lot of hell bent for the lead types in here either. Monomoy Girl is a forwardly drafting type. Lady Kate probably goes forward. Swiss Skydiver, you know, likes to be at least positioned to engage. This Emergent Harvest Moon is intriguing from Simon Callahan. Where's the pace coming from here? Who wants the lead? Lady Kate, I guess.
Yeah, I guess they'll probably let Lady Kate have it. I don't know. I mean, boy, if I was Kenny McPeak and I was telling Alvarado, you look to your right when you come out of the gate, and if you don't see hands moving, you don't see her going, go out there and establish it. And then just try and fend off Monomoy Girl as best you can. I think it's a pace scenario that plays into the two favorites primarily, because each of them want to be sitting sort of on a moderate type of pace. I guess the fly in the ointment is Ollie's Candy, because we've seen Ollie's Candy very aggressively ridden in the past. So I don't know. I think that John Sadler also knows that Ollie's Candy's at her best when she's on the lead, and she nearly won the Apple Blossom, where she staved off every competitor in a huge field except for Cece. So I'm not going to be shocked if Ollie's Candy's very aggressively ridden out of there. One of the ways that you usually cure a horse with secunditis is you put nobody in front of them early. And so I think that might be the thought process of course, that doesn't work with a horse like Cassidus. But, it could work with Ollie's Candy. So I'm not going to be shocked if they ride her very aggressively. Monomoy Girl made out like a bandit being on the far outside. I don't think that the draw hurts with Skydiver. I don't think the pace scenario hurts either one of them. You mentioned Harvest Moon, who's got some speed. So too does Cece stretching out. But the inside posts for them were negatives. I kind of was a little interested in Cece if she maybe could get that outside stalking trip she did in the Apple Blossom. But I think ultimately, pace-wise, this is going to come down to the two principles on paper, and it'll either be Monomoy Girl or Swiss Skydiver.
Well, and those decisions we'll decide and we'll discuss later in the week. The late double and the turf, we've got the international contingent. Everybody has been talking nonstop, Nick, from mid-season, really, that our domestic turfers were going to be at the mercy of whoever came over. And I don't know. There's some nice horses in here, including last year's runner-up, United, and Channel Maker has certainly been on a nice summer run into the fall. Arklow righted the ship with the blinkers added, but I don't know what who Channel Maker going to lead them. United's going to be forward. What do we think?
I think something like that. I mean, I guess all year when we were kind of pissing all over the American turf horses, a couple of them actually stepped up later in the year and showed that they're really not that bad. And then we've also gotten a kind of a modest lot of European horses, although I will say that Tarnawa and Magical are not horses that we should be, neither is Mogul for that matter, that we should be terribly dismissive of. I think that Channel Maker in all likelihood will end up on the lead. Manny Franco's been kind of hell-bent on getting to the front the last two times. I think they're going to stick with what works. I think you can unfairly label him a horse that moves up significantly on soft ground because he wired a firm turf course last time. So, it was an autumn firm, so it wasn't quite exactly, a July firm. But it was a course, I think, that was a little bit firmer footing than he had run over the time before. So, yeah, I think they'll try and wire. Arklow was a little bit more forwardly placed last time. He's been forwardly placed when he's been most successful. I don't think he'll be particularly close to the pace. Tarnawa is probably the deepest closer of the European contingent. Mogul is a little bit handier. Magical also can be mid-pack, so I don't think they're going to let anybody get too far away. I will say that if the early pace for some reason ends up getting a little quicker, then it definitely works in the favor of Tarnawa, who is just the type of Euro, I think, that you really want to sink your teeth into, an up-and-coming progressive type that's getting better with each passing start. And I think that she and Mogul, for me, are most interesting here from a wagering perspective, and I don't think either of them are hurt pace-wise.
Finally, we've got a Breeders' Cup Classic that really is going to be a highlight. You know, every year we say, oh, we're getting to the Classic and it's going to be the highlight. This actually really is going to be the highlight. This is a fun bunch, and really interesting things happened, including the two Baffert Speeds lining up shoulder to shoulder on the outside. But given the long stretch, Nick, it does feel like everybody's going to have a fair chance to find their spot. This is going to be a fairly run race.
Yeah, it definitely should be. I mean, if anything, it should be run at a pretty strong pace.
Yeah.
And really, the person who's going to determine whether that happens or not is Bob Baffert. So the question becomes, assuming the Global Campaign is ridden to get to the lead, the question becomes, which of Bob Baffert's horses does he believe can be effective rating? And let's not kid ourselves, Authentic and Maximum Security have not shown a great amount of that so far this year. Now, Maximum Security has in the past. So I think he's probably a little bit more reliable from that perspective. But, you know, what you're asking of him or Authentic is to stalk a quality horse like Global Campaign and then put them away and hold off horses that are going to be moving late, like Improbable and Tom's d'Etat. And that's a lot to ask of those horses. The other one that you have to mention, at least pace-wise, who really, given what his preference is, made out poorly at the draw, is Tis the Law.
Mm-hmm.
So, is Manny Franco supposed to be aggressive with Tis the Law out of there and try and take them on their way? Because I think one of the things that the Baffert squad is going to do is try and make sure that Tis the Law stays locked in, because they don't want him to get that coveted, three or four wide stalking trip. And then you'll see where Tom's d'Etat ends up settling early. Improbable, I think, will be. My worry with Improbable is that the whole coming from off the pace last time might be something that they read a little bit too much into. And I'm hopeful that Irat doesn't let that horse snooze through the first half mile, because he'll lose a lot of position that he needs. And this is a hard group of horses to make up a lot of ground on, in my opinion. But he's a deserving favorite. I'm interested wagering-wise in Tom's d'Etat, Tis the Law, a little bit of Improbable. I think it's going to be a race run at a pretty strong early pace. But it is definitely a classic worthy of the name, and one that I'm very excited to see how it unfolds. You'll see a lot of jockeying for position, pun intended, in the first quarter of a mile. And that'll go a long way towards determining the outcome.
Well, and Tom's d'Etat, being where he is, I think sets up shop. And if you're looking for a middle mover type, depending on what Ortiz does, on paper, they're the two best horses, Tom's d'Etat and Improbable. And it feels like it's a chess match between Rosario and Irad.
It does. And it'll, if those two end up running 1-2, you look down at the paper afterwards and you say to yourself, what the hell was I doing? You know, these are the two best horses coming in. They have the best heat figures. You know, they're coming in. I think that it's, I don't want to say Tom Zaytoff's coming in the right way, because I really just, I detest the notion that you're bringing a horse into their biggest objective off a 90 plus day layoff. But I also trust Al Stahl. And he knows this is kind of an ouchy horse that can't run that often. And his plan, I think, all along was to bring him in fresh. And so he's doing that. He's run well locally. And, you know, he's probably going to get what you can envision to be the best trip on paper because of his versatility. And he can sit a little bit off of it and then sort of blast off late. You know, one horse that we didn't mention in terms of pace-wise is, how the hell does By My Standards let all of them clear off in front of him and just decide, oh, I'm gonna sit 4 or 5 lengths off of it and be successful? So don't be surprised if Gabe Sayas juices him a little bit out of the gate, asks him for speed, I should say. I should not ever use the word juice. You know, along with his law. So that's kind of an interesting conversation as well. And I think it enhances the likelihood that the pace is strong. And for somebody like me who wants this pace to be strong, wants off the pace horses, that's what I'm hoping for.
Well, we always find this a fruitful hour, and Nick Tamaro gets everybody's juices flowing, literally, when it comes
you
to...
You can use the word, not me.
I can use it. I can use it freely. And we are looking forward to the further analysis. And speaking of which, we're going to introduce tomorrow afternoon. We'll have it at the website, and I'll send out the links. But BetMakers is sponsoring the At the Races Breeders' Cup betting companion, and Nick is handling the two sprint races, and so look for his written analysis, the filly and mare sprint and the regular sprint, and I'm doing the Juvie and the Classic. Rick Hammerly's doing the Dirt Mile and the filly and mare turf. James Scully, the turf sprint and the distaff. Kev Humphreys, the long shot lad, the juvenile turf and the mile. We'll talk to Kev either tomorrow or Thursday, and Seth Merrow already turned it in, the juvenile turf sprint and the juvenile fillies, and Joe Bianca from TDN doing the juvenile fillies turf and the big turf. So look forward to the Bet Makers Bonanza At the Races Breeders' Cup betting companion. Nick, thank you, buddy. Talk Thursday.
You bet. Absolutely. Talk to you soon. Take care, Steve.
Nick Tamaro, NTAM1215. Take a break here real quick. Come right back. 90 seconds. Andy Serling to join us. And as I mentioned, speaking of bet makers, going to have a conversation the last 20 minutes. Want to talk about the legislation in New Jersey and what it's going to mean long term, because the prospects for fixed odds wagering is at hand, and it's going to take a little time to spread it, but I want everybody to understand how it works and the benefit. And so Dallas Baker from BetMakers is going to join us, as well as Bill Pascal from New Jersey, who is doing the work when it comes to the legislature to get the rules in place. It's a very exciting prospect. Hour 3 At the Races, live from Keeneland from the Breeders' Cup, back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
45 over 92.
180 over 111.
182 over 100. And I had a heart attack and a cardiac arrest. And then a stroke.
Your blood pressure numbers could change your life.
A lot of people don't understand, including myself, I didn't, now I do, the impact of having a stroke.
My memory is shot.
When I woke up, I couldn't speak.
If I would have followed a treatment plan, I would not be in this situation.
It's a tough journey.
Lowering your high blood pressure could save you from a heart attack or stroke. If you've stopped your treatment plan, restart it, or talk to your doctor about creating one that works better for you. Start taking the right steps at manageyourbp.org.
It's a new life, but I'm going to make it better. I'm coming back. Ask your doctor, check your blood pressure.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only three states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Sirius XM Sports presents